Make no mistake, if you're an author, you're an entrepreneur. You're selling the world on your book, aren't you? Of course, it's not as easy as launching a business and then tossing any old book up on Amazon. That's why I help entrepreneurs publish books on the specific topic and in the specific way that will launch or grow their businesses. Welcome to Entrepreneur Publishing Academy with your professor, Anna David. What's up? Thanks for listening to Entrepreneur Publishing Academy. I'm your host, professor, and all the things, Anna David. I'm not all the things, I'm some of the things. And before I forget to tell you, this podcast is sponsored by Book Elevator Pitch. And if you want to know what that is, if you're writing a nonfiction book, you need to know what that is. So go to bookelevatorpitch.com to find out. So today I answer a burning question, or my the person I interview does. It is all about how to get Amazon reviews. Now, this guy knows. His name is Craig Tuck, and he is a romance novelist, but he also has a company called Hidden Gems, which offers many services for writers, blurb writing, coaching, layouts, cover design, all the things. But what I wanted to talk to him about is Amazon reviews, because as I've talked about in previous episodes, it's pretty hard to get Amazon reviews, to get the people who agree to review, to follow through, all the things. And so he has a company with very reasonable prices. You can sign up to have the Hidden Gems reviewers read your book. They cannot guarantee reviews, they have a pretty good track record. But what I thought was most interesting is he talked about how many reviews you should get that you need, what studies say, and also why it's good to have bad reviews. So with that, I give you Craig Tuck. Okay, Craig, thanks so much for being here.
Great. Well, thanks for having me, Anna.
As I was telling you, I just discovered Hidden Gems last week and was completely blown away over all the services, but primarily getting reviews. I have researched other places where you can do that, and the cost is exorbitant, or they're janky reviews. So I think it's an incredible service that you offer. So I would love to find out about the history of Hidden Gems. When did you start it? How do you do this?
Yeah, sure. We've been around since 2015. I think I was pretty much the first one to start a review service that was, like a legit service that wasn't a call center in India that, you could get fake reviews on. And that came from when I was writing. I started off as a writer in self-publishing. Before that, I had a career in IT, and I was a product manager, and I sort of left that to do self-publishing when it started back in 2013. Well, I started in 2013. It was sort of just getting started back then. And, I came up with the internet, everybody doing it then. I was part of some groups, some author groups, and we were all sort of teaching each other, figuring it all out as we went. Amazon was changing things. KU wasn't even a thing back then. Then it came out, and it was KU 1 and 2, and we were going through all that, learning it. And what I found was, after writing for a while, back then it was romance. I was doing like a book every month or two. And I just started moving into, helping other authors. Like, I figured out how to do reviews. I had my own art team. And then I started helping some other authors by using my art team for them. And then sort of Hidden Gems grew from that, where it just became from like a sort of side project into a full-time thing. And now I never have time to write books anymore. So that's
and so how the problem with art teams, ART teams, we call them launch squads, is that they flake. So what do you do? What are those rough statistics I've seen with most launches is like 50% flake rate. And we're talking flaking from the most people who are so enthusiastic about supporting you. So what's a good way to handle that? How do you deal with that?
Well, we have, we service all the different genres, but we started with romance, and that's definitely our biggest. And we're always having, we have the same issues, right? We're always trying to get new people on board because, yeah, people, it's not just that the people that sign up don't read, it's more that they just start losing interest in reading regularly. And then they became, you know, they start off as somebody that reads all the time and they don't read as much, then they hardly ever do. And so it's a constant churn, right? Which is easier when you're, it's a service, and that's something that we're working on and doing all the time. When you're an author, it's harder, right? And the other thing with being an author and then using your own readers as ARC readers is those are your fans, and those are the people that are best likely to buy your books. So it's sometimes not the best idea to use them, because although they'll probably give you a good review, you're sort of, you know, hampering your own ability to sell into that fan base.
Right. So what should people, okay. So somebody comes to Hidden Gems, you are booked out. I told you I tried last week, and it's, you know, 8 months from now was the next availability. How does Hidden Gems work?
So it depends on the genre, but yeah, we do get booked out pretty far in advance. But there is, when you sign up, you might have seen, like, there's a couple waiting list fields, right? So basically, if you select those and something earlier comes up, you know, I might contact you and say, hey, do you want to move up to whatever date, right? So there's a good chance. It depends on your genre. Some move more than others. We have, like I said, we have more romance readers, so those ones move around a bit more. There's more chance that I can move you up. Mm-hmm. But with some of the other genres, it's harder. You sign up, and basically when your date comes up or as it approaches, you get all your information in a few days before your book is due to get sent out. We send out like a sign-up email to the readers in the genre that you've chosen. Those readers sign up if they're interested, right? Mm-hmm. And then we send out the book and hopefully they leave reviews. We have about an 80%, like on average, we have about an 80% review rate. In terms of how many people sign up versus how many leave reviews. And we charge based on sign-up. So even if you ask for 100, if we only get 15 people signing up, you're only charged for 15, right?
And then so if 50 people sign up and 25 review, you're still charged for the number that signed up.
Right? Because you can't, I mean, Amazon's rules are, you know, pretty sticky, and you're not supposed to charge for reviews, right? You can't pay the reviewers. They can't be influenced, blah, 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 right? So you're not paying for reviews. You're paying for, you know, the readers, you're paying for us to send your book to readers that have a good history of reviewing. There's often times that people don't review that have nothing to do with them just being flaky. Like if they don't like a book, like books that, you know, not every book is a gem, right? Right. So if a book isn't, some of them are hidden gems, but some of them are just not gems at all. And so if you get a book that isn't great in general, and the reviews are low, I find that those ones get less reviews in general because people decide they'd rather not review than leave a bad review, which is up to them, right? Mm-hmm. They don't have to. We can't force anybody to review. So we have reader forms that we send out, and they can leave the review, and then or they can fill out a reason for not reviewing. And one of the reasons is, you know, I didn't like the book, and then they just decide not to review. But that's not everyone. Some people are fine leaving poor reviews for a book they didn't like.
As an author, it's not that I love poor reviews, but I've gotten plenty of them, and I would much rather have that than no reviews, a review.
Well, yeah. And I mean, one of the things that authors don't, they're sort of scared of bad reviews, and they don't need to be, right?
No.
There's a lot of research that says that these days people actually trust books that have, or products in general, that have some negative reviews. If they're all 5-star glowing reviews, people just don't believe them. They think that they're fake. So a few, you know, more lower reviews actually help your book sales than, you know, all perfects. It hurts your feelings as an author, right, to read them. But, you know, there's other things you can learn from them. If you read your reviews and you see that, you know, everyone is saying sort of the same thing, maybe that's something to look at about your book. Maybe there is an issue that you can look at. But then sometimes they're just trolls, or sometimes they're just, you know, people that just didn't connect for some reason. And that's fine too. And those kind of reviews, people will see that. It's not like, you know, well, if people are drilling in and looking, they're going to be like, oh, that review is just an idiot. You know, like he doesn't know, you know, he doesn't like this book for his own personal reasons. And that's clear. Right. But if everybody's like, oh, this book wasn't edited properly. Right. And like a bunch of people are saying that, that doesn't look good, but that's something you should look at and be like, wow, I probably should have edited this better.
And thanks to the wonders of publishing today, you just re-edit it and re-upload it. And 72 hours later, or maybe 3 hours later, it's available on Amazon. The new version.
Right. And if you, you know, if you pull it down and put up a new one completely, then you get rid of all those old reviews. I mean, it's harder now. It used to be that Amazon let you just do that all the time. Now I think you have to change the title. Like it has to be sort of a different book. But you can do that. There's ways to do that. So if you, I mean, you don't use it just as a way, it's, you know, to just always sort of reset. But like if your book had total problems and you fix those, sometimes it's hard, especially if a lot of your reviews called out those issues, it's hard to tell people that they've been fixed. You know, what are you going to do? You could upload the, you could update your description, but I'm not sure how good that looks.
Right? Yeah. Like, hey, I finally have a good version. You, if you, with the new ISBN, you absolutely can upload a new version, but you know, cause I've learned the opposite way, because we've wanted to keep reviews of previous books, and it's always a little bit dicey. Will Amazon let us? And even with the new ISBN, whatever, we were able to merge them for one of my books, thank God. But so a new ISBN, I really think can help you get away, but it doesn't mean people could search and still find the first one. So I always say Amazon forgives, but it doesn't forget. It's even if you put it back to draft.
Yeah, you can unpublish it and it probably will disappear from Amazon, but it'll still be on Goodreads and, you know, other places if people really search for it. Yeah, the internet absolutely is not going to forget about them.
So I truly can't get over how great the pricing is. I will tell you, the day I've discovered Hidden Gems pricing, I'm almost, maybe this is an intervention to tell you to raise your prices, because I found this other site, $60 a review for, again, the legit review.
So, you know, the problem is that how are they guaranteeing, you know, the reviews? You can't really do that unless something funny's going on. And, you know, was that for any product, or was that a book specifically?
I think it was books. You know, I just, Amazon is so, you know, it's interesting. I'm always just exploring these things. And you know how you can buy fake anything. You can buy fake YouTube views, fake comments. You go to like Fiverr, yeah, cannot buy a fake Amazon review. Like the Amazon has cracked down so much on that. And plenty of people, and I'm sure this happens sometimes with your reviewers, their reviews don't get approved for whatever reason that Amazon doesn't feel like sharing.
Yeah, there's a lot of, so Amazon's always had like a long history of cracking down, and I get it. If you can't trust the reviews, then that's sort of their whole business model, right?
Yeah.
And so I do understand it. The problem is that they are very heavy-handed. They, you know, I always say they shoot first and ask questions never. So if you don't, if you fall afoul of their rules, even if, you know, those rules were unclear, or you disagree that you fell afoul of them, you're kind of, I mean, it's hard to get them to listen to you and to do anything about it. So, you know, they've had a long history of like suing, you know, websites and shutting down authors completely, taking away their earnings and, you know.
I've been shut down as a reviewer.
So that's one of the things that has always been an issue, but it has become worse lately, is what they are doing is they're just either they're outright, you know, saying no to a review for who knows why, or they're just taking forever to approve them. You know, I get, you know, emails all the time from readers saying, you know, I left my review, but, you know, Amazon still hasn't put it up. And it's not much we can do about that. They eventually do, or they block them. And if they block them, there's usually a reason. But who knows what it is, right?
I'm innocent. I'm innocent. They blocked me and I was like, this is ridiculous. I love reviewing books. They gave me no reason. And then we've tried to call and they will not change it. And so then I resorted to starting another Amazon account. And then I'm like, then you need another phone number. It was just getting, I was like, fine.
Yeah. Yeah. And it has to be tied to a credit card.
Exactly.
Well, right? And you have to have spent $50 in the last 12 months. Right. So there's a whole bunch of things you have to do. And I get it because again, you can't use a gift card, right? Because then somebody could open up a call center somewhere and give everyone gift cards. They can all start new accounts and done, and they spend their $50, right? But you can't give everyone a new credit card, right? I get it. I get why they do it. But the problem is, like, one of the great things about an ARC is that there's so many readers out there that can't afford to buy the number of books that they want to read, you know, that they have the ability to read. There's people out there that just, they're low income, but they have a lot of time. They love reading and they love to leave reviews. And so an ARC is great for that. You know, they get free books, they leave reviews, perfect. But then Amazon comes out and says, well, you got to have a credit card. You got to spend $50 a year. And just for some people, that's just not something that they can do. And it's tough. It's tough. I get it, but it's tough on those people.
How do you find these people who love reading so much?
That is always the issue. We're always, always looking for more people. I mean, I have ads on Facebook. I have, you know, I tried different things. I've run promotions where I've had authors send sign up links out to their own mailing lists. There's a lot of ways to do it, but none of them are sort of foolproof or cheap. And it's such, like I said, a constant churn. And with Amazon, cracking down, it's, you know, we're moving away, not away, but we're moving to allowing reviews on other sites too. There's so many authors now going wide. Publishing on other sites other than just Amazon. So we're going to start allowing reviews on, you know, Goodreads and Kobo and Google for authors that want it, right? If authors just want Amazon, they can have, you know, just Amazon. But there's a lot of authors out there that are looking for reviews elsewhere. And so that's something we're working on now.
And so is the way it works that you have a system of getting the books, like maybe a book funnel or something like that, so they can get a PDF or a Kindle version?
Not BookFunnel, but we just do it ourselves. When you sign up, you can upload we require both the EPUB and the PDF. It used to be Mobi, but you know, Amazon's stepping away from Mobi. So EPUB and PDF, and then anyone that signs up and gets chosen, we send them the link to download the book. They just go from there, and we have the instructions on how to send the EPUB to their Kindle or how to open PDFs. Good for those people that have problems because it can be opened sort of anywhere, any device, but it's not a great reading experience. So definitely the EPUB is the preferable version now.
And then does the author put the book at the 99 cents and have them purchase it, or are they unverified reviews? Or
no, they have to be unverified. Yeah. You can't do that because, I mean, you know, the reviewers aren't going to want to buy the book every time, right? Otherwise they're basically paying for, and we can't, you know, we can't buy it for them. That would be against Amazon's rule. Like, all you can give a reviewer is a free copy of the book. You can't give them any other compensation. And if you were to buy a book for them, that would be basically that. So they are unverified, but you know what? Downloads from KU. And if somebody downloads your book in Kindle Unlimited and leaves a review, that's also unverified. So it's not like, you know, verified just means an actual sale, but it could verified is a sale. Unverified could be, an ARC could be a Kindle Unlimited download, you know, so it doesn't really say much. And I don't think a lot of people pay attention. I think most people look at the overall score and number of reviews, and that's like probably 90% of the people. And then a few people will drill in deeper and start reading a few of them. How many of them care if they're verified or unverified? I don't think that many.
Yeah, I don't think readers care. I have heard that Amazon prioritizes, but it helps the algorithm, but you know, Amazon's not telling me, so I have no idea.
Yeah, they change their algorithms all the time. I don't know. I don't know if that matters. Like, I think, you know, when you can sort, and I think the default sort maybe shows the verified ones first. But you know, like, you can change that when you drill in. So I don't think it really affects anything.
And how many readers do you have?
In the system, we have, I'm sure, I don't know, I haven't checked lately, 10 to 15,000, I guess. But don't forget, like if you're an author and you deal with newsletters, you know that a vast majority of your list isn't opening your emails, clicking, you know, so it, yeah, and that's across all genres. We do 16 different genres, right? So, and most people are part of more than one genre, right? Like you don't just like science fiction. Usually you like science fiction and thrillers and fantasy or whatever. So you'd sign up for all three. So the list goes out and people are picky and they have time issues. And, you know, at the beginning of COVID, like we were seeing actually an increase in readers and people signing up. And then sort of as it went on, and I think all the sort of like streaming services and all these other things started catching up with COVID, you know, everyone sort of stopped reading more. So then it started going down, right? So like you're competing against a lot of different things. So even though it might go, you know, like a book in a particular genre might go out to a few thousand people, you still might only find like 10 or 20 people sign up for it. If you know how many are opening and how many are interested in that topic, how many have time at that time, you know, all that stuff.
Do you think there's a certain number of reviews that every book should have where it tips the scale for the potential reader?
I've heard different numbers, but I don't know if I read a stat. I'm just looking. I did a presentation at a author's conference in Vegas once about this, and it was something like 5 reviews was like sort of like your minimum. The purchase likelihood, this is from a 2017 Spiegel Research Center study. So the purchase likelihood for a product with 5 reviews is 270% greater than the purchase likelihood of a product with no reviews. So, you know, but that's 5 versus none. I don't know, 5 versus 10, 5 versus 20, you know, it's a different, like, what are you comparing against, right? I think the main thing is like, if people are comparing apples to apples, there's 2 books that they want to buy. They don't care. They can only buy one. All other things being equal, if one has more reviews than the other and they're, you know, in general positive, they'll probably go for that one, right? It's that social proof of those people bought this. So a lot of authors want as many as they can get. Others are happy with just some, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. Mine is totally emotionally based. 30 and up. Boom.
Yeah. I think 30 is a great number. I mean, I think we just published, or maybe it's in tomorrow's blog, where, you know, one of the guys that works with us, he wrote a blog about a sort of a book launch template that he uses. And I think he mentioned 30 is the number he goes for in terms of reviews. Yeah.
And so let's talk about the other services you offer. There, you know, also do the beta readers, are those the same people?
They do get sourced from the ARC team, but I sort of handpick and hand invite them based on the reviews that those people leave. If they seem sort of like more in-depth kind of reviews than just somebody writing, you know, I love the book. So if I think that the person, and they read a lot and all that stuff, so I'll send them an email and say, hey, we have a beta reader service. Do you want to be a part of it? Because those beta readers, they get paid. But they're, you know, the expectation is that they're going to put together a much more detailed response. And it's based on, so when the author signs up, he fills out, he or she fills out a questionnaire of the questions that they want to ask the author, the readers. So you might have like 10 or 15 questions that you want to ask the readers, and that goes out. And when the readers finish the book, they fill out that questionnaire and submit it. And then that's how that works, basically.
That's amazing. What if somebody listening wants to be a beta reader? How much does that pay, do you say?
It varies, because it varies on the details of the book. So things like word count, how many days you have to read it, you know, various things like that. It's not a huge amount of money, because most of these people were ARC readers and they're reading for free in general. And it's more just, you know, for them to have, you know, some, a little bit of spending money. You know, it's range is probably like, I don't know, $10 to $20 maybe per book. Yeah.
I mean, that's amazing. I'm doing my first book with beta readers as I go, and it's a new experience. Do you recommend doing beta reading, when the book is, the first draft is complete, earlier on in the process?
You know, some people like to do it early, but then you kind of, then you almost kind of have to do it again. Right. You want to do it before editing, usually, you know, right? Because if you fully edit the book and then you send it to beta readers and then find that there was all sorts of issues, and then you have to do a lot of rewriting, then you might have to get it edited again. And editing is a lot more expensive. So it's not, you don't really want to do editing twice. Doing a beta, running it through beta readers twice is much more affordable if that's something you want to do. And some people do that. Most people do it once. I usually recommend that you get more than one beta reader, because, you know, everybody's got personal opinions and, you know, things that matter to them more than they would matter to someone else. And if you just get one person and they have a visceral reaction to your book for something, it's hard to tell if it was just that reader and something about that reader that wouldn't really be the same from everyone else. But if you have two or three people and they, if they're all saying the same thing, then, you know, you should pay some attention. But it was one guy who said that and the other two had no issue with it, and you don't think it's an issue, you know, it's easier to just sort of discount that as that's a personal thing with that person, right?
People get emotional.
They do.
What I love about the beta reading is, you know, because I have this company where we write and publish books for entrepreneurs. And what they will do is they will give the book to their friends when it's done. No, give it to your potential readers. You, maybe your friends are your potential readers, but usually, and you know, non-writers will have that, like their inner writer comes out and they're like, you should tear this apart and start again and give all this terrible advice. And so, you know, it's so helpful to be going to the people who actually would buy your book instead.
Yeah. And I mean, it's the same thing with it's like giving it to your mom, right? Like, you know, you're not going to get a real reaction to it. But if you send it to your ARC readers or your fans too, that's some authors do that. The danger there is that they're already fans. They're pretty much going to love everything you do, most likely, right? They're not going to want to sort of like say something negative. Some of them will, but you don't know. They might just be like, I don't want to, you know, make my favorite author angry by saying I didn't like their book, and maybe they'll stop sending them to me or whatever, right? So I personally think it's better to get somebody who is not familiar, and then, hey, maybe you'll end up finding a new fan out of that person and they'll buy future books.
So. Yeah. I mean, I will say I'm using a software right now that it's anonymous feedback. And half the people are fans and half the people are strangers. And the better feedback, I can tell who's a stranger because they're being harsh, and it hurts more, but it's way more valuable.
Yeah. Yeah. And I try to tell people, like, you know, constructive criticism. Remember that the authors are still people. Like, you don't want to be really super negative. I mean, you can tell them the issues, but you don't have to be harsh and rude about it. Cause sometimes, you know, somebody be like, this was terrible. You know, like, that's not, you gotta say what was wrong with it and sort of, you know.
Well, what was really helpful is, especially one reader was so angered by it. What it made me realize is it's not targeted towards the people that I thought it was targeted to. Cause he kept getting really offended by my assumptions about, like, people could afford to do this or people value this. And it's like, oh, thank you for helping me completely reconceive this book so that I know it's not for you. And that's why you're so angry.
Yeah, no, that's a good point. And that's actually something that, you know, so with the other services, like we have, you know, I do consults, we do, you know, we have a newsletter, we do covers and we write blurbs for people. But one of the things that I talk to authors about sometimes is that issue where, you know, if they have a problem with their marketing and their promotion, sometimes, you know, it's not necessarily a problem with the book, but it's a problem of who you're targeting it to. You're targeting it to the wrong group of people. You wrote a book and you think it's going to be loved by this kind of person, but maybe it's really actually loved by this kind of person, or you just don't even know. You're just sort of like not really good at advertising and promoting, and you're just doing it in the wrong places to the wrong audiences. And you're not specifically trying to send it to a specific group, but the group that you are sending it to is just not the right one. It's just figuring out who to send it to is key sometimes.
So what would you suggest? We have to get close to wrapping up. What would you suggest to the person who's not going to do hidden gems, who just wants reviews? What is the best thing to do?
If you have a list of your own, you can use that. Like I said, the only danger is like those are people that probably would have bought your book. So you don't want to sort of dig too deep into that. But if you need some reviews, then you can do that. Otherwise, you know, there's places on Reddit or various sort of Facebook groups you could try where you'd say, hey, I'm an author, I have a book, who wants to read it? You know, the danger is, like you said, a lot of the times you're going to send the book out. I think when I started, like the stat of most authors and why most people came to us was they were finding they'd send the book out to, 100 people and they'd get 5 reviews, or if that. And that was sort of the issue, right? And then you're just really just giving out free books at that point. So that's sort of the danger of just randomly finding stuff. But and like I said, a list can sometimes work, but then if you're a first-time author, it's harder at that point because you don't have that list. So you have to go take a few more chances.
Yeah. Yeah. And there's also, I don't love it, but a site called Pubby. I don't know if you're familiar with that, but you trade reviews. And I tried it and I hated how disingenuous that people hadn't read the book. And I wasn't reading theirs because I wasn't interested in like seafaring romance or whatever it was. But people do it.
Yeah. And I would be careful with those because Amazon probably wouldn't approve of that sort of thing and if they find out, not only could they just pull the reviews, but they could shut down the author using it because they might say that you're basically getting fake reviews that you're getting fake reviews. Right. So it's really dicey with them. They're very, very, their rules are intentionally vague. And again, I get why, because if they weren't, people would then, if they were very specific, if the rules were super specific, people could find ways to break them and then have the recourse of saying, well, that's not against the rules, right? And then they'd have they'd have to add another rule and another rule. So they keep them vague. But the problem with that is then you have to trust them to apply them fairly. And they don't always.
Yeah, so. More at their mercy. Yeah. Well, Craig, thank you so much for your time and this wisdom. If people want to find out more about you, about Hidden Gems, where should they go?
HiddenGemsBooks.com. If they're an author, they can go to the author services tab that shows them everything we do. If they're a reader, they can sign up. There's links to sign up as an ARC reader. And
you have a podcast.
We have a podcast called Fully Booked. It's on all the main podcast sites. And it's an author-focused podcast. So it's generally sort of author-related topics, marketing and promoting. We try to get self-published authors on to talk about their experiences that they've had and what they've learned, what works, what doesn't, stuff like that.
You are a podcast listener because you were listening to this. So thank you so much, Craig. Thanks, you guys, for listening. I will talk to you next week.
Thanks for joining me this week on Entrepreneur Publishing Academy with Anna David. For more info about the show, go to entrepreneurpublishing.academy, where you can get links to show notes and subscribe to the show on iTunes, Stitcher, Spotify, Google, and all the other places. Speaking of those places, if you got anything out of this show, I can't tell you how much I'd appreciate a rating on iTunes. And please, don't forget you can tell an author or entrepreneur friend about the show. Another forget-me-not, my company Legacy Launchpad Publishing is available to help industry leaders and those with stories to share at any stage in their publishing journeys, whether that's writing, editing, or publishing. Just go to legacylaunchpadpub.com to find out more. And be sure to tune in next week for, well, next week's episode. You know, if you subscribe, you never have to worry about missing one.